Ryan, it's so good to have you with us. You and I have known each other since you were a part of WAVE.
Correct.
When you served in the military on the East Coast, you were a part of WAVE Church. But I want you to just tell us a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up, and how did you become a Christian?
I grew up in Georgia. My family moved out to Colorado for a business venture, and I found Colorado Springs. I grew up there. I ended up going to college, University of Colorado, Colorado Springs. And in that time, I was cutting grass to pay for college. And, you know, what do you do after college? You know, all I knew I wanted to do was be a billionaire. That sounded like a goal, be a billionaire. Cutting grass to be a billionaire, there's a few steps between that. And somewhere along the lines, my brother decided he's going to go be an Army Ranger. I was like, well, that's cool. My dad was in the military. He's a Green Beret, or Special Forces in the Vietnam. But so because of him, I just like, well, I've lived with him. I don't need to be in the military. That's silly. And then as I'm cutting grass, I'm like, this is pretty boring. And then I was in college, I thought, this is really boring, and I just need to learn how to make money. No one's telling me how to make money. And I said, and then somewhere I was like, you should go be a Navy SEAL. I don't know where that came from. It could have been the Charlie Sheen and Steven Seagal movies of the time. So
that was filmed here in Virginia Beach, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Yeah. It's authentic. And so I was like, I'm going to do that. And along that path, I sought out this thing before the internet where you could really go down this path of learning how to be a SEAL. And I found the crustiest SEAL I could find. And he was still active in Colorado, and he taught me how to swim. Because at that time, I didn't know how to swim. And so he said, this is what you're going to do. And then what should I do? He said, a lot of it. So swim a lot. So I finished college, and I just went right into the teams right after that, or so, the Navy.
But you knew how to swim. But
I knew how to play in the water. I could play in the water. I was an Eagle Scout, so I could swim.
Right.
I could hold my breath a little bit. And so from there to learning how to swim and then getting into the Navy, and then that was just once you're, you know, going down that path.
That's awesome. I remember I was playing underwater football with a guy who was in the teams.
Yes.
In my backyard. And I had the ball. And he said, give me the ball. I said, you'll have to kill me. He says, no problem. Put me in a leg lock and took me to the bottom of the pool.
Yeah.
And I realized he would kill me. So
yeah.
I gave the ball up. Okay, what lessons has the NSW Naval Special Warfare taught you about being a contributing part to your community that you think we as a church could learn from? There's obviously some great lessons you've learned.
Well, praise you. I would say WAVE Church specifically and NSW is showing up and knowing your role within the team. And you preach that quite a bit. And I think that's why I identified with WAVE Church and Steve Kelly so well, because, you know, if you're going to be a member of the team, everyone thinks that you have to sacrifice or in a certain way. But to be a real good member of the team, you have to almost first be selfish in yourself and say, well, I'm going to show up fit, ready, with the gear I need, things I need. I do not want to be the guy they're waiting on. And if you could do that first, then you're actually contributing to the team. Mm-hmm. And then in the off chance something doesn't work out, the team will be there or you'll be there to help that team. And I really do believe that you have to first take pride in what you're doing individually. Mm-hmm. And I hope that makes sense to people, because everyone thinks that I have to give and help them. Well, you're of no help to anybody else if you don't show up ready to go. And I've come to that conclusion. Yeah. And team conversations more and more and more.
So self-leadership.
100%. Self-accountability.
Self-accountability. Yeah. And you do that. He was here at 9 o'clock this morning. I didn't get here until 9:30. Praise the Lord. Okay. What would your current self say to the younger you before entering Buzz? If you were able to encourage or speak to him, like, what would you say to yourself, to your younger you?
What I found, and I'm in that position now, I'm an old guy. I've come to the conclusion, we had a ski trip out in Colorado for SEALs. I'm president of the Rocky Mountain chapter, EDT SEALs. And my only goal is to get guys to hang out together. And these young guys come in and they're like in their 20s, man. I'm 45 now. And I'm looking at them, I'm like, am I an old guy? I'm old. And then my buddy, Charlie Shea, who's a 70-year-old SEAL from Vietnam, he's like, you're not old. I was like, well, I guess so. Put in perspective. But I sent these two young guys out to Buds. And just one of them helped swim, and the other one I was just coaching up. And I told him not to put the pressure on themselves because you want it so bad to be a SEAL. It's a captive world. The instructors own you, and you willingly give yourself to the instructors.
Yes.
Whatever they say to do, you will do it. And you will put this pressure of performance. It can't be like an athletic performance, because the good athletes will always quit. The best swimmers quit. The best runners quit. And the problem with that is they're so used to being praised as an early age of accomplishment for their athletic abilities. But I saw this too often. They had the fastest runner. He came in and crushed the time. I'm dragging my feet with skid marks on the sand. I'm so slow. I'm barely passing. And the instructors looked at them unimpressed. And well, that's why didn't you do better? And that ate them. They thought like, oh, the instructors don't like me. I don't have what it takes to be here. I'll never make it. Next thing you know, ba-ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
And they're just ringing out all day. And to the point where they had this term called Goon Squad. I was a proud member of Goon Squad a few times. You're just not following up in the runs. It's just these forever runs. And whatever, your legs will cramp up, you lock up, and they got you. The sharks gather on you, and boy, do they get you. And so you're just going to have more fun with the instructors. And my buddy's like, don't worry about that. Goon Squad graduates. Everyone knows that. I was like, yeah. He's like, just take the beatings. Keep moving. I'm like, yeah, that's a good life lesson. So don't stress that. I try to express that to all the young guys going out. Don't put the pressure on yourself. Every day you're there, you're winning.
Yeah.
Just keep winning. Keep showing up.
Take the beatings.
Take the beating. Oh, they're
keep
coming.
Keep moving.
Yeah, enjoy them.
I
you got nothing else to do. What are you going to do? You might as well start. Sometimes if you make the instructors laugh, you're having fun. I mean, it's a weird dynamic out there. Trust me. They're not mean. They're not yelling. They're just sadistic. Two different things.
Yeah.
They really enjoy what they do. So.
They do. I had the privilege, a guy who was part of WAVE and then got transferred out to be the XO of the BUDS program, invited me to spend 4 days watching the guys go through Hell Week. And I know you said they're not mean, but they really looked like they were to me.
It's
wet
an act.
Wet and sandy, I'll never forget. Wet and sandy, these poor guys. And you're right. They have surrendered their lives
100%
to these instructors because they want to make it. They want to make it through.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what you said. You just got to keep moving.
Yeah. It's kind of weird, the instructor dynamic out there. And a lot of people don't understand it. But right when I came in, it was 2003. I finally got in. And I was concerned the war is going to be over. Oh, man, I'm going to miss this war. I mean, what's the point of being a SEAL? And I get out there, and this is when the instructors first come back after 20 years of peace. And so they actually had the combat experience, and they would talk to us about it. And you think they're being mean to you, but they're really not. In a way, they love you so much, they know what's coming for you, but you don't know it yet. You don't know at the time what's coming. And so they are hammering you, but it's out of the love of the teams and for you going forward. They're not doing you any favors by telling you good things about yourself.
That's awesome.
And I that's a dynamic I would love to one day write the book about that thing, about how that would apply to like just us parenting. And they're hard on you for a reason because they know what's coming and you don't know.
Yep.
I mean, they've been there and they've seen it.
Yeah.
They know the expectations coming.
Yeah. So today's Memorial Day and we honor and remember the fallen as a nation and we should. Thank God we do. What does, from your perspective, what does remembering the fallen mean to you personally? How does remembering their sacrifice change your daily life?
So by the time I actually made it through BUDS and I showed up on the East Coast, the teammate, Operation Red Wings, we're all from, if you're familiar with the Lone Survivor movie, the mission was called Operation Red Wings. And as a new guy, you're just trying to survive in a team, don't embarrass yourself, basic stuff. And they call us all into this the room, and the commander says, everybody who's not a SEAL, get out. Don't really know what happened. I think only a few people, it had not even made the news. It just came over of what had happened in that situation. And then you hear the story, and we don't know who's alive. We just heard some guys from different teams got together and didn't. And none of it made sense at the time. Even then, you would think, oh, the SEAL team's new. Well, not on the East Coast. Information wasn't flowing back and forth. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, we end up having the memorial service. Mm-hmm. And without a doubt, if this is the hardest day of my life, I'll be happy this is the hardest day of my life. Because you know, one of the gentlemen on Danny Dietz, his wife gets up there. If any of you were at that memorial, it was the worst day. She gets up there and she's crying. The thing she didn't say, the thing she apologized for not giving him a son. And she's just screaming and crying and just asking for forgiveness of him out publicly. Into this group of the biggest auditorium, full of SEALs. Everyone had the chest candy, their trident. And every guy's like this. Mm-hmm. No one could look at anybody after that. And to her credit, the gentleman who was helping her tried to help her get off stage because he thought, you know, she's going to just fall down emotionally. She's like, no, I have to do this. I have to do this for Danny. And I tell you, that was like, it puts it all in perspective for real. And ironically, Danny had the same recruiter I had in Colorado. And all these weird connections, and I run into the family, and I've stayed connected with them 3 years. Not because I seek them out, but they're from Colorado. And I knew his dad, and his dad unfortunately just died last week, and you know, we're gonna go out there and do something for him. He really did a lot because of Danny to help other young men. And so I never knew at that time that I was gonna have a connection to his family and his, you know, we were doing the swim across the Hudson and she wanted these little short shorts that we swim in. So I went and, like a good team guy, stole a couple pairs for her, got her what she wanted. I was like, yeah, easy day.
Yeah.
So that connection over time and just knowing that you see the families, because the guys are one thing, but it's when you see the families, that's when it becomes very real.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, if they want anything, obviously make yourself available. They don't ask for much, actually. Mm. They just, if you can help them, obviously help them.
Yeah.
So
it's I remember when I was out in San Diego and this gentleman took me out to the cemetery to visit the graves of some men just as Memorial Day. It just made me remember. And he talked about what their lives were and what they did and how they lost their lives. And to me, I don't know how to say this, but I was never all that comfortable visiting grave sites. I found that for me just something I really didn't even have a desire.
No.
But then he taught me what he does, and the coin ceremony about what coin you leave at someone, depend on how you knew them or whether you knew them.
Mm-hmm.
But for everybody to visit anyone who has lost their lives, even in serving the military, you can leave a penny on the tombstone. It's a letting the family know you visited that gravesite. And he started talking about their life, and you could tell.
Mm-hmm.
And what it did to him really touched me, because I went, he's living a life wanting to be worthy of their sacrifice.
I think that's it right there.
Yeah.
Because I know that day he took you there, you saw Michael Mansour's grave. Mm-hmm. And Michael Mansour was in my bud's class. I rolled into that class, and Michael Mansour, the first people, you know, you get buds, sometimes things just don't work out for you. And, you know, they have a remediation program, which is beatings until you join your next class, mm-hmm. and which is good. I needed to heal up my lungs. And I got into this next class, and Mike Mansour shows up. A lot of people don't realize that Mike Mansour, actually, Medal of Honor winner, had some troubles his first bud's time and didn't work around. He made it a goal to come back. He says, hey, how's it going? Nicest guy you could be. And in 2006, our platoon was also in Iraq, working out of the airport area, going out nightly, living in a dream. And we were. You know, we're kids. And one day, Woody calls us out. He says, hey, I don't know who you guys know, but some guys out west got shot up pretty bad. We don't know anything. This guy named Mansour, do you guys know Mansour? Yeah, well, he's dead. That's what we know. We don't know anything else. And we didn't know the whole story. Now it's a movie. But we didn't know this at the time. And all I could think of is Michael Mansour was the first guy that I saw. And he was a cool surfer guy too, by the way. Really mellow. And he wasn't out there thinking, I'm going to be a hero. He just wanted to do his job. Because you could just see, you just knowing him, and he sees the grenade, he jumps on the grenade. And we heard all the story after. And you're just so busy processing that. At the time, we're going on a mission that night. You know, it's for real. Okay. And living up to that is for sure. You don't want to do anything to embarrass yourself, or more importantly, you don't want to embarrass the community, the Trident, least of all yourself.
Yeah.
I got lots of embarrassing stories, so that's fine. We can tell those some other time. My first time in combat, falling through a manhole, those are great stories. But no one could see it because it's nighttime.
Yeah.
So
that helps.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're a believer, you're a Christian.
Very much so.
I like the way you said that. How do you think your faith made you a better warrior in that community? Like, you went in there being a believer.
Yeah, I was a believer. I was definitely a Christian. Grew up in a very traditional Christian American home. There was never this issue like you see on these B-rated movies where guy doesn't know if God's real. No, I just accepted it. I know God is real. And I ended up coming to Wave Church. I remember the turning the corner the first time right there. I was like, that's going to be our church. I was like, that's going to be my church. I'm going to go there. I'm like, okay. I don't know why. I don't know why I felt like that. There were some like other small churches I went to prior to that. I was like, But I just connected well with this church. And I think the quicker you accept it, the quicker you move on, quicker. I've never questioned it. And I wish I had a cool story. I felt challenged of, God, I don't know why this is happening to me. Well, most of the time it's happening to me because I made a poor decision in life and bad things are happening to me. And that's just the candid truth. So I would love to tell that story in a different way, but I think either you are or you are not a Christian. Either you are a SEAL or you're not a SEAL. Are you living up to either standard?
Yeah.
And make that decision. Yeah. That's how I literally think about that conversation.
I think so often people get this idea that Christians are weak.
Oh, gosh.
There's an actually today in the culture, there's an anti-leadership, like the male toxicity, and we need to celebrate men. We need to really appreciate leaders and manhood, and you can be a Christian, you can be a warrior for God, and some of the people that make it the hardest are the ones that call themselves Christians and don't live like they're Christians.
Gosh.
And that gets really hard, doesn't it?
Correct.
I'd say, I got a question for you. When you served the military, would you have wanted to die for your country?
Should we give the backstory on this one?
Yes.
Okay. So I think we were in Australia, and we were doing you had asked me to come talk to the Australian guys, and it was a great trip. And you had asked me the same question, and I think there's this belief system that these guys wake up every day like, I cannot wait to die. And like, no, actually, it's probably not that cool of a thing. You probably don't want to get shot, and worst case scenario, you don't die, and something bad else happens to you. And I was like, no. And then you were kind of caught off guard by that.
Yeah, well,
was like, why would you? I was like, in my thought process, and I told you, I was like, no. You should want to win. You should wake up wanting to win the task. So if your task is to show up and have whatever gear ready, that's winning. If your task is to perform, serve your team. You want to be able to guide to serve your team. So you should only focus on serving your team. Serve the mission. Do what's asked of you. Don't do more. Don't do less, because in the bigger picture, that's what your task is. And so I've just never thought of like, oh, I cannot wait to die. Because I know the Hollywood theory is like, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
And Michael Mansour, he did. Because had he not, all three of them would have died. Or four, I forget the number. But all the other guys on the roof would have died. Mike was like, I got to save my team. I got to protect my team. And that's what his thought process is. When he jumps on that grenade, I'm going to take it. Boom. He just wanted to save. He covered his friends.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, that's
we'd love to have Michael here.
Yeah.
But I'm thankful for the guys that are left because of him.
Wow.
You know?
So that's my next question, because I already knew the answer to the question. Yeah. You don't want to die.
No, you
want to
win.
You want to win. You want to defeat the enemy.
Yeah.
But would you die for your brother?
Of course, if I had to. But let's figure out a better option
first,
all right?
Yeah.
Yeah, trust me. Trust me, I would. There was like jokes like, well, what kind of guns would you take? And I'm like, I take a missile. I don't know.
Yeah.
Why would I take a gun if I get a missile? Why would I do that? That's silly.
Overwhelming, overpowering.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to go
and
it'd be unfair.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like that. And that's a good mentality to have, isn't it?
Of course.
You know, okay. What did Buds, and we're talking about that
Buds,
time,
yes.
What did it teach you about yourself?
I'm going to go back to my earlier statement. The pressure I put on myself, I don't know what it was that drew, and I still don't know why certain guys are drawn to that lifestyle. It's a weird thing. It's a, I had it told to me by another SEAL called Never Neverland. It's very much Never Neverland. You never grow up. And you're surrounded by a world of limitless possibilities. And the guys who seek that think that way. They don't ever think they can't do something. You can call it whatever you want. Oh, they're so arrogant. Well, great, good. I would rather have arrogant winners on my team than doubtful losers. So I want a group of arrogant winners who believe they're going to do something. Even if we fail, we're going to do it. And that's a unique place where these guys, again, I was talking about how they will submit to the instructor's authority. The pressure you put on yourself, and really, you don't need to worry about, as long as you're there, you're winning. And I put so much pressure. I wanted this so bad. I don't know why. I don't know, because the ships would probably be worse than the fleet. That's way harder. They like, it's way harder in the fleet. I can't stress that. And I knew that would be way harder for me. And so as the pressure I would put on myself, I would overanalyze things. And if I could just talk to any young guy going down this path, back off of that.
Yeah.
If you're winning, you're there.
Yeah.
And every time you're there, you're winning. And then just take your beatings, enjoy life.
Yep.
Double down, keep going forward.
That's a great lesson for life and business, in college, you know what I mean? In your job that you have now, you're winning because you're there. Keep turning up. Take it.
The
keep
grind.
Yeah.
The grind. Just keep showing up. Just keep showing up. Because there's always going to be, trust me, I thought I was a good swimmer by the time I got there. Then I met these Division I Annapolis Academy guys who could swim in water polo. Oh my, they literally were walking on water. They would laugh after these 2 mile ocean swims, like, oh, did you see something on the beach? All I remember was like getting seasick on the beach, doggy paddling out there trying to make a time. And so don't compare yourself to those guys.
Yeah.
Those guys are not the same.
Yeah.
They've had years
than you.
They are very much outliers. Do not compare yourself to those guys.
They that compare themselves among themselves are not wise.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a Bible verse. Okay. Here's a question. What are the top questions you would encourage an active duty service member? Because this church is full of military. And we're talking to our Seaboard Road campus as well.
Ooh.
It's great to have you guys with us. We see you. Can we welcome our Seaboard? I haven't welcomed them yet. What would you say to them who are active duty service members to consider if they're beginning to pivot life after the military, which you've done?
Well, that's a bigger question. I think take care of the immediate need and where you at in life. I can only speak from the guy who came out of the SEALs. I can't speak from a guy who came out of the naval aviation community who's a pilot. The things I would say is have a good baseline, and I'm going to make this so simple for the people getting out. If I've come to this conclusion, you need to stay physically active, and I mean that for a lot of reasons, a whole other life lessons in that. You need to stay physically active. Whatever your graduating waist size was out of boot camp, try to get back to that. Stay physically healthy first, because your life is starting over. The ideas of drinking beer and eating ice cream, that's cool, that's fun, I love it, trust me. But that's not what you need to be doing. Now you have a new point in life.
Yeah.
And you need to prepare yourself. Don't be the guy who, oh, back in the day I did this one cool thing. No, you got cooler things ahead of you. Mm-hmm. And I would really encourage guys to get to those next steps. And then you gotta do this thing called get a job.
Yeah.
You have to buy your own bullets now. You have to do all kinds of stuff. Like, they don't just give you free bullets anymore. Yeah. And you have to pay for your own trips to Africa.
Yeah.
You have to do, like, all this stuff that's not cool anymore. Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny.
So that's the thing. I would baseline that. Stay physically healthy. If you ever want to reach out about, you know, corporate stuff, I'll tell you that some other time.
I got to give a shout out to Tommy Altman, who was up here still. How many years has it been, Tommy, since you served? 20 years, and he still fits in his uniform.
Looking
that's
good.
That's Rick Hall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I love you guys. I love everything you do. So a question for you about that, the trend. What was the hardest part of your life after the teams? Because I know that's a big transition. Because like you said, if you're a Navy pilot or an Air Force pilot, it's obvious you'll transition to be a private or a commercial pilot. You've got those skills, they're transferable. I'm not too sure many people are looking for guys who were SEALs and regular jobs. How did that go?
Okay, so what's going to happen is there's the corporate world, and it just depends. What I would suggest or say based upon my experience is they're going to want to hear your stories, and they might buy you a beer, but they won't give you an interview, and they won't get you a job. And that's fair, but that's okay, because to our credit, team guys can be incredibly arrogant and believing of themselves, which is going to what you need. You cannot have that self-doubt. Get the job. It doesn't have to be the best job. It's never going to have the meaning of getting your trident, being a SEAL, being in a platoon, being around the guys. It's never going to have that meaning. So get rid of that. Stop with that thought process. The only connection you're going to have to that feeling again is when you're around other SEALs.
Yeah.
So let's get pragmatic and find something that has a dental plan, 401k matching, the things that actually matter in life, right?
Yeah.
And then what's our end goal? Because this is not going to last forever. So am I going to go to 55, 62? When do I retire?
Yeah.
I have that conversation with lots of people as a recruiter. That's what I talk to them about. I'm like, how long are you going to do this for? You know, and these guys got millions. Like, well, you know, I think I got 5 more years. I'm like, dude, you're out of whack.
Yeah.
You just need to go buy a boat and sail. I'll do it for you. Give me the money. I'll help you.
Yeah. I can help you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so honestly, I would say just start with the small things right there moving forward.
Yeah.
And then figure it out as you go. You're never going to have the final plan.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys who all think they're going to be a SEAL and super secret squirrel, dude, it might not happen. It might happen. It's the same thing in the corporate space.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's true, because I see people who live in their past and they get their identity out of what they used to do. Yeah. I see it with pastors. You know, someone would come the wave, I used to be a pastor. And I love the fact that they're giving me context to their background, what they bring to the house and to the table. But if your identity is everything about what you used to be, then you have a current day identity crisis.
Yeah, it's the biggest issue. Yeah. You just got to move on. And you know what? I would encourage, it's a very, no matter what dynamic you're in the world, I've met more people after I got out who were, oh, I was going to be a Marine, but my girlfriend said, and so she talked me out of it. And I was like, and then they're in their 40s. So if you're a young guy and you're having this debate, I don't know what to tell you. I would say if you have that thing in your heart to be a Marine, which is not natural, but you want to be a Marine, then I'm all for you, man.
Yeah.
Go do it, because you can't look back in that life of I wish I had.
All right, I got a question for you. Ready for this one?
Yes, sir.
What was the hardest part of life in the teens? What was the hardest thing you had to do?
You know, the actual, the hardest things, I think the hardest, well, in a way, because you're around this team, it makes it easy. Right, because you don't have a naysayer. There's no naysayers. It's more of like, can you Roger up? Can you Roger up? But candidly, let's talk about hard things. I joined the Navy, and I get tremendously seasick every time.
Okay.
And yeah. I just keep going out on the boats. And I was like, then I look at these boat guys, and they're sick. And I'm like, well, if you're sick, oh, I know it's coming for me. I sometimes would have my sea legs. Other times I wouldn't. I'd be swimming in the pond, and I get seasick.
Yeah,
I was like, geez, what's going on with me? So, I mean, that would be like the hardest thing. But in all honesty, I think if you're focused on the job and on the task in combat, that's what you should be focused on. Don't worry about the dangers. I know it sounds, oh, it's a movie. But you really need to do that. Because if you're going to focus on that, you're not going to focus on getting the task accomplished. The task accomplished is the important part. That's why you're there. If you want to get out of there, accomplish the task. Don't focus on that thing that make you afraid.
I remember meeting probably one of the toughest guys I think I've ever met in my life. And he came to me, he goes, I want to get baptized. He gave his life to Christ here at Wave, or he recommitted his life at least at Wave. And his rep on the teams was one of the most elite. And he said to me, I want to get baptized. I said, no problem, man, we'll do that. And I'm thinking, we got a nice baptismal tank. He goes, no, I want to get baptized in the Chesapeake Bay. I said, no problem, man. We'll just wait for summer to come and we'll wait for the water to warm up. And he goes, no, it's January. I want to get baptized now. And I said, no. Do you know how cold that water is? And do you know how far you have to walk out to get to deep enough water? And he goes, and this is what he shared with me. I never forgot it. One of the toughest guys I've ever met. He said, Steve, when I went through Buds, I developed a phobia that no one ever knew about. He goes, I'm sharing with you a demon. that is my most difficult thing. He goes, the cold water in San Diego created a fear of cold water. He goes, I've had to fight it. It's a demon. I want to break the demon. And the way I believe is to become a follower of Christ, I need to take that next step to maturity. And so I'm going to break that demon by getting baptized. I said, the only problem with that is I might get your demon.
Yeah.
And so then I baptized him. His wife was so moved that she goes, I want to get baptized. And I went, no, you don't. Because it meant I had to go all the way back in, bring her back out there. And the guy that was helping me do the baptism was 6'8", and the water only came up to his knees, but it was up to my chest.
Yeah.
I couldn't feel my legs for 3 days afterwards.
Yeah, the ongoing joke I kept playing in my mind is I was out there from January to February, or Hell Week was in February, and I just kept thinking the Beach Boys are a bunch of liars. It is not warm in Southern California.
Yeah.
It is amazingly cold out there.
And by the way, that water baptism got his fear gone, broke it.
Yeah.
Okay. next question for you. What are you proudest about when you reflect on your career and your service? What are you the proudest about?
And I was thinking about that. And I think sometimes too, the biggest things that, it's easy in the team community because we always compare ourselves to these guys. And you would read stories, if you have some time for reading, read about Steph Bass and Michael Day. There's plenty other of these guys. But you should read their stories. Because even if they made a movie, it won't be as good. And you hear these stories just firsthand account, second account, like guys that were there type stuff. And you're like, oh, I never did anything compared to these guys. And then, so you always downplay, you think, and trust me, compared to these guys, I did nothing. But I think the biggest honor a guy can walk away from with the teams or their military community is the respect of their peers. Because if you don't have that, then what was the point of it?
That's good.
I mean, if you want to be in the brotherhood, you have to like you, trust me, we will tear each other down in an instant because we're good at that. Mm-hmm. But then we'll hug each other the next instant.
Yeah.
But do you have that mutual respect? I see it now volunteering in this position where guys from Vietnam love to talk to guys who are current, and in their mind, and they're 70 years old, they're Vietnam SEALs, they're 18, 20 years old again.
Mm.
Their mind is still at that spot.
Yeah.
They go back there so quickly because they connect with them quickly. It's impressive.
Awesome.
I'd say that would be it.
We got 2 minutes left, and I want to just get to this last thought about what you're doing now, because I love what you're doing now. You're obviously in business for yourself. Mm-hmm. You have your own company, recruiting, helping people find their next team, putting people in workplaces, environments. But you have a non-profit as well. And share a little bit about the vision you have.
Yeah. Well, ironically, it was probably sitting up there. Because I think it was in this building, prior to the old building.
Yep.
So I think it was up there. I was here. Steve was preaching. And I'm zoning out. I'm candid. This is where I'm at in life. I have to listen to several sermons over and over and over again before I actually hear them, because I'm always thinking, like, going down these rabbit paths. And I thought of I hate to give them credit for this, but the Army Special Forces groups, where they would actually partner with other indigenous tribes or whatever to go force multiply and build it out their organizations to wage war. So you have a few guys who influence a large group. And so I kept thinking, it's like, you know what, I know all these SEALs, when they get out or whatever, they're always looking for the next thing. They want the next adventure. They want to connect. And so let's get these guys who actually have skills, because I would always meet these missionaries living in Colorado Springs who had no skills, no talents. They were liabilities to themselves and everyone around them, but they played an acoustic guitar. And I was like, well, that's cool, but I don't need a guitar. I need to well, Doug, and I need somebody who can handle austere environments, or somebody who can deal with just harsh realities of children overseas with bad things. And I was like, if I got these guys and I could partner with organizations that Steve knows, I was like, that would be the easiest win. So I just need to become that billionaire.
Yeah.
And remember, I just need to come back to the whole, if I was only a billionaire, I could solve the problems.
Yeah.
And that's where the term follow-on mission came about. It's a military term that's very common within the community or the military as a whole. And so how do you get guys who are skill sets that are so unique what do they get out? Let's give them the next follow-on mission in life and let them partner with other organizations.
And you want to be able to take them.
Take
and,
them.
And fund
yes,
it, the trip.
With established organizations.
And put some purpose to their...
100%, because the secret, here's the closing secret, I'll get you behind the curtains. It's not about the mission itself, it's about the guys coming.
Yeah.
I don't, ironically, if they're not Christians, but they're good carpenters, I'll take them.
Yeah.
If you're already a Christian, sorry, I need guys who aren't Christians, let's go. I want the guys to connect and see their purpose
later. There's some
in
Christians
life.
I don't want with me, to tell you the truth.
Yes,
there are, well, Ryan, I love what you're doing. I love your vision. I know you want to take some guys to places that I know of, like in Uganda.
Yes.
There's some stuff over there, that unique skill sets that could be an answer to some of the needs in that country. I know your goal is to get your first $100,000. So we want to do something. We just want to say we love you, we see you, we honor you, we thank you for your service. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you. It's an honor
to
speak to Wave Church.
That we want to present. If we can get that.
It's a big check.
There's the first follow-on mission.
Can we do a picture?
That's on behalf of you, church, to help this man do some great things for God. Can we thank Ryan Everett?
Thank you.
Come on. Yeah, please.